Now, as we come together today, before we get to that series, I want to look even further forward because I want to prepare us for what's ahead. In the next few weeks, we'll be walking through the roller coasters conversation. After that, we're going to have a conversation called Unstuck, and we're going to talk about finding God's will in our life and how if we're moving against God's will, it can feel like we're stuck. But when we get in alignment with God's will, it's amazing how things move forward, how it changes, how we look at our current circumstances. Some of you feel really stuck in life, stuck in a relationship, stuck not in a relationship, stuck in terms of your career, all these different areas in life where we can think, man, God forgot about me, but has God actually forgotten about me? Maybe we just need to adjust how we think about God's will and what it is that God's doing. So we're going to walk through that conversation. And then in the fall, and this is going to be our major focus as we walk through the next few months, in the fall, we're going to walk into a conversation that I think is the most significant conversation for us to have right now as a family and as a community, because we're going to talk about, and the name of the series is going to be called Leaving Loneliness. We are experiencing loneliness at a level that we have never experienced it before. And psychologists and psychiatrists are really at the end of themselves when they look at what's happening inside of people's lives. And it's not just because of the isolation physically that we've experienced, but it's also because of what's happened in terms of conversation and discourse inside of our culture, where for a lot of us, we're afraid to be able to say what it is that we believe, or we're afraid to engage in certain conversations about things because we don't know how someone else is going to respond to them and what's going to be said about. And so for many of us, what we've done is we've just pulled in. And no one really knows us, and we don't really feel like we can have a meaningful conversation with anyone around us. We don't feel like we can really be ourselves for most of us. We're living with this phenomenal facade that we've created, and we don't really even know what to do about it. But I don't know if you know this or not. God actually equates the very idea of death with loneliness. And when God talks about what it means to be spiritually dead, he's talking about loneliness. He's talking about being disconnected. The whole mission behind Jesus giving his life was to be able to eliminate loneliness in our lives. And as God steps into your life, he says, no, I want for you to know me and for you to be known by me. I want for you to connect with me. I want for you to connect with one another. It's incredibly, incredibly important. It's at the heart of his mission. And so as we go into the fall, we're going to be going all in on this conversation, leaving loneliness. And I want to encourage you next week, we're going to be challenging you to think about who you can invite to be a part of that, to be a part of that conversation with us. We want to be able to bring together our entire community to be able to talk through the hope of Jesus and how it impacts that loneliness in our lives. And the amazing thing is, I don't know if you guys have thought about this or not, but the amazing thing is that as we move into this next year, we have a whole new community to impact with the message and love of Jesus. A whole new community. Because as we've moved through this last year and a half, there's been a lot of transition inside of our community of individuals who've moved outside of our community, individuals who are moving into our community. And so we are surrounded by so many new neighbors and coworkers, and our community in a lot of ways has changed, which presents us as we move into the fall with an incredible opportunity to be able to share the message of Jesus with people we've never been able to share it with before. As a matter of fact, some of you are here right now in this space or maybe watching online. You actually moved to this community over the last several months, and you're just beginning to explore what that looks like and beginning to build those connections and beginning to build your community here. And we want to be able to do that as we move into the fall really powerfully, and even as we move through this summer, we want to be able to live out the mission that God's given us inside of this new community. I don't know if that excites you, but that really excites me because I love being able to share the message of Jesus with new people and with people who haven't heard it before. Now, in order to prepare for that, we need to do something together. And we need to together engage this mission. And so what I want to do today is I want to take you to a story that I've never taught on here at Hoboken Grace. Now, over 13 years, I've never taught on this passage, and I want to walk you through this because I think that there's a challenge inside of it that we need to engage with in order to be able to prepare well to impact, to reach our community, and to be able to take advantage of the next few months and the fall ahead of us. The story is found in the book of Judges. One of the reasons why I've never taught on this story is it's actually a pretty long story. It takes three chapters in Judges, Judges 13 through 16. For those of you who aren't familiar with this book, it's found in the Old Testament or the Jewish scriptures. It's part of the history of the nation of Israel. And Judges is kind of an interesting book because the nation of Israel has come into the promised land, but rather than actually following God in the promised land, they keep forgetting about God, and God turns them over to be captive by other and to be conquered by other people groups around them. And then they turn back to God, and God rescues them, and they forget God, and there's just back and forth. The book of Judges is like this, and it's not just chapter by chapter. Sometimes multiple times within a chapter, they forget, and then they're rescued. They forget, then they're rescued. They forget, and they're rescued. Well, inside of that, one of these judges, one of these individuals who God raises up to rescue the nation of Israel is a guy named Samson. Some of you have heard his story. You're familiar with his story. I actually find that a lot of us are familiar with his story because for some reason, and I don't know why, the story of Samson makes it into a lot of children's Bibles and is told in a lot of Sunday school stories. If you read the story of Samson, that's confusing because it's a terrible story. Like, I don't know why we want our kids to be familiar with this story. You'll understand why, for those of you who don't know it, as we continue to walk through it. But for some reason, we do. The other day, my 7-year-old, true, honest story, my 7-year-old comes up to me, and he's reading through his illustrated children's Bible, and he's on the story of Samson. He says to me, "Dad, this is my favorite story." And I thought, that's not good. I don't understand how that could possibly be good, because it's a terrible story. Let me share it with you. So it starts off Judges chapter 13, and the story starts with an incredible promise. It says this: "A certain man of Zorah named Manoah from the clan of the Danites had a wife who was sterile and remained childless. The angel of the Lord appeared to her and said, 'You are sterile and childless, but you are going to conceive and have a son. Now see to it that you do not drink any wine or other fermented drink, and that you do not eat anything unclean, because you will conceive and give birth to a son. No razor may be used on his head, because the boy is to be a Nazarite.'" So for those of you who don't know, Nazarenes or Nazarites are individuals who would take a vow to devote themselves. They take a Nazarite vow to devote themselves to God from the moment that they're born. And so this individual, he says, I want for him to take this vow. Inside the vow, there were three things that they would vow not to do. So number one, they would vow not to drink fermented drink. In addition to that, they would vow not to touch a dead carcass, because under the Levitical law, this would make them unclean, so they would vow not to do that. It's not that hard to pull that one off. You would think. And then number three, they would vow not to cut their hair. And this was kind of an outward, a physical symbol of the commitment that they made to God and the vow that they had made to or before God in their life. And so this angel comes to Samson's mom and says, listen, this is going to happen. You're going to actually have this child. He's going to grow up. I want for you to have him take this vow so that he will be set apart. He will be set apart to God from birth. And then it continues and says, and he will begin, and this is where you see the promise, and he will begin the deliverance of Israel from the hands of the Philistines. The Philistines at this time had basically conquered the nation of Israel. And the way that it worked is that they would come anytime they want and take whatever they wanted. So they would raid the nation of Israel whenever they wanted and take back whatever they wanted to take with them, including people. So this could be food, this could be livestock, this could be people. And they would do this. The nation of Israel was experiencing this over and over and over again. And so God steps in and says, okay, this is going to be, the people had begun to turn back to him. He says, this individual, Samson, he's going to begin, this word begin is actually important as we move through it, begin the deliverance of Israel from the hands of the Philistines. So the story starts off really positive with this unbelievable promise. Okay, finally, the nation's going to be rescued, and it's going to happen through this individual, Samson. But then, and again, we don't have time to read through the whole story, but I encourage you to do it, Judges 13 through 16. As the story begins to unfold, it doesn't work out the way that you think. Samson becomes phenomenally strong, physically strong. And you see all these different situations in which he's getting into these fights and these battles, and he emerges victorious over and over again. And you see his strength. At one point, he actually carries the gates of the city out of the city. He's just phenomenally physically strong, literally cannot be overcome by anyone. And the Philistines are trying to kill him. They can't kill him. But Samson is obsessed with women. As a matter of fact, almost his entire story is about women and the women that he pursued and the fact that he's consistently pursuing the wrong women and not interacting with God, not listening to God about who it was that he should pursue. And really, even when you look at the battles that he engages in, it's not about the nation of Israel. It's usually about a woman. And he feels like he's been slighted or he's been wronged, and that leads to these battles. And so you see him overcoming the Philistines, but not because of the fact that God is leading him in these directions, but because he's responding to something that typically happened because he wanted or he didn't get a woman. And this is the way the whole story plays out for several chapters. You see this back and forth and all this drama and these different situations until you finally come to the last woman. Many of you have heard the name of the last woman because, again, this story is fairly infamous. And he finally becomes obsessed with this woman whose name is Delilah. You guys have heard of her as a radio show host, right? But he finally becomes obsessed with this woman, Delilah. Delilah is just using him because she wants to be able to become wealthy, and she figures if she can make her way in and figure out a way to be able to overpower him, then the Philistines will pay her handsomely for that. So this relationship begins. It's very transactional. He gets from her what he wants, and she tries to get from him what she wants. And so consistently she comes to him and says, okay, well, what is it that actually makes you strong? What's the secret of your strength? He comes to her to get from her what he wants, doesn't really care that she's setting him up, which clearly she's setting him up, because every time she asks what the secret is to his strength, she then does that to him and then calls in the Philistine rulers to overtake him. He, rather than being overtook, actually conquers those leaders and emerges victorious every time. There's no hiding what she's trying to do. There's no mistaking what she's trying to do. But it seems, as you read through the story, that Samson begins to look at this as almost a joke. He looks at this as a game. And so he decides that, listen, not only can I take from you whatever I want to take from you, but I'm going to take from them whatever I want to take from them. And I think as you move through the story, it becomes clear that Samson believes there is no real secret to his strength and that nothing and no one will ever stop him. So he doesn't have to be afraid. Most of us read through the story and you see him interacting with this woman and you think, man, why is he being so careless? He thought he was invincible. This is very important for you to understand inside the story. He comes to the point where he feels that he's invincible. So it doesn't really matter what he tells her, and it doesn't really matter whether or not she's trying to trick him. He doesn't really care. He's getting what he wants. It's kind of a game. He likes to fight. So the fact that she keeps trying to set him up and he keeps winning is kind of a joke on her and a joke on them. And he knows not only that he enjoys this, but he also knows that he's going to win. So what does it matter? Until something happens. Let me read to you the end of the story. Then she, talking about Delilah, said to him, "How can you say I love you when you won't confide in me?" Which is just, this is like the ultimate of manipulation statements, right? How can you say I love you if you don't? Right? And you know, I mean, the whole thing's just been manipulation, manipulation, manipulation. But again, he doesn't care. He doesn't really think there's anything to it. This is the third time that you've made a fool of me and haven't told me the secret of your great strength. I actually think he enjoyed making a fool of her, which I actually do, which is why he keeps doing it. It's a power move. The whole thing is a power move by him. And just displaying, even, I can take from you and I can take from anyone else whatever it is that I want. And I will. This is the third time you've made a fool of me and haven't told me the secret of your great strength. With such nagging, she prodded him day after day until he was tired to death. So she just keeps asking until finally it says this. It says, so he told her everything. Now, I don't think here, now, there are some people who teach this passage, and maybe you've heard it this way, or as you've read through it, you've thought this, that Samson finally gets to the point where he says, well, I'm going to tell her the secret. I don't think that's actually it. I actually think that he just comes to the point where he says, listen, I'm just going to tell you the whole story. Now, does he think that this is actually the secret to his strength? I don't think so. I don't think he thinks the vow meant anything at all. He's already broken the vow inside the story multiple times. He's already broken the vow before this. I don't think that he thinks there's anything that can stop him. And so she keeps nagging. He's like, all right, fine, I'm just going to tell you the whole story. And, you know, there's this thing about the razor that's part of the vow as well. So he continues, no razor has ever been used on my head, he said, because I've been a Nazarite set apart to God since birth. If my head were shaved, my strength would leave me, and I would become as weak as any other man. I don't think he actually believed that. I think, again, he's setting her up, and I'll explain why in just a second. When Delilah saw that he had told her everything, she sent word to the rulers of the Philistines, which she's done three times before. This is nothing new. Same game, same practice. Come back once more. He has told me everything. So the rulers of the Philistines returned with the silver in their hands. She's being bought off. Having put him to sleep on her lap, she called a man to shave off the seven braids of his hair, and so began to subdue him, and his strength left him. Then she called, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. This exact same story has played out three other times. Every time he's gotten up and he has defeated them. And then listen to this. This is why I don't believe for a second that he thought that his strength was tied to his hair. It says, he awoke from his sleep and thought, I'll go out as before and shake myself free. Now, here's the thing. If you haven't cut your hair your entire life and someone shaves your head, and you wake up, you don't miss that. You know that's happened. I mean, his hair is phenomenally long. He's not going to wake up and just miss the fact that, oh, it's gone. No, he knows it's gone. Does that leave him afraid? Nope. Does it make him hesitate for one second? Nope. Why? Because he didn't think that it had anything to do with his strength. Because Samson was convinced, no, my strength's not about anyone or anything else. It's mine. It's about me. And all of what's been done and all of what I've accomplished and the victories that I've had, those are about me. It's not actually, listen to me, he didn't think it was actually about God. He didn't think that his strength actually came from God. No, my strength comes from me. And so even if you shave my head, I'm still going to be able to do what I did before. Listen to this next line. But he did not know that the Lord had left him. Now this is a terrifying statement. And as you read through the story of Samson, you cannot miss this. I mean, this is a terrifying statement. Because in this moment, God communicates both to Samson and to all of us as he shares the story with us. That if you live your life believing that your strength and your accomplishments, that it's all because of you, if you live your life believing that it really doesn't have anything to do with God, you may one day wake up and find out what it's like without him. God may one day allow you to find out what you can actually accomplish without him. And that should terrify us. Because so many of us take for granted all that God does in our life to rescue us, to provide for us, to navigate the journey with us and for us. All of us live our lives, I don't care what you believe about God today, all of us live our lives drowning in God's grace. And in this story, God gives a warning. If you live your life believing God doesn't have anything to do with it, that you can do it without him, don't be surprised if one day you wake up and he lets you find out what that's actually like. And for his entire life, Samson had lived like, now, my strength's my strength. This doesn't really have anything to do with God. Yeah, my mom had that little conversation, whatever, she told me that story. And I keep the vows somewhat, but when it's convenient, I'm going to do what I'm going to do for me and to serve me, because my strength is really my strength. Until one day God said, okay, I'll let you find out what that's actually like. And so as the story continues, it says, then the Philistines seized him, gouged out his eyes, and took him down to Gaza. Binding him with bronze shackles, they set him to grinding in the prison. The story starts off with an incredible promise. But as you come to the end of the story, you find the one who is supposed to rescue the nation, blind, grinding at a grindstone in prison. Throughout Scripture, there are stories of victory. There are stories of encouragement. And then there are stories of warning. There are tragedies. And as you look at the story of Samson, it is the ultimate of tragedies. Because the one who is supposed to rescue is blind at a grindstone in prison. And the interesting thing is, it's not even the end of the story. It's not even the end of the tragedy. There's a little bit left. Listen to how it continues. It says, but the hair on his head began to grow again after it had been shaved. Now the rulers of the Philistines assembled to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon, their god, the idol that they worshipped, and to celebrate, saying, our God has delivered Samson, our enemy, into our hands. When the people saw him, they praised their God, saying, our God has delivered our enemy into our hands, the one who laid waste to our land and multiplied our slain. Do you understand what's happening here? Samson, the one who is supposed to be the deliverer, the one who is supposed to actually rescue, is now being used as a symbol of the power of Dagon, a symbol of the power of the Philistine gods. He's literally being used to mock the God of Israel. The ultimate of tragedies. While they were in high spirits, they shouted, bring out Samson to entertain us. So they called Samson out of the prison, and he performed for them. When they stood him among the pillars, Samson said to the servant who held his hand, put me where I can feel the pillars that support the temple, so that I may lean against them. Now the temple was crowded with men and women. All the rulers of the Philistines were there, and on the roof were about 3,000 men and women watching Samson perform. Then Samson prayed to the Lord, O sovereign Lord, remember me, O God. Please strengthen me just once more, and let me with one blow get revenge on the Philistines for my two eyes. Then Samson reached towards the two center pillars on which the temple stood, bracing himself against them, his right hand on the one and his left hand on the other. Samson said, "Let me die with the Philistines." Then he pushed with all of his might, and down came the temple on the rulers and all the people in it. And finally, the tragedy ends. And the unique thing, the interesting thing, is that the promise that God made actually comes true. Because in this moment, all of the rulers of the Philistines come to an end with Samson. The promise actually comes true. But in the most tragic way you could possibly imagine. And the thing that gets me, is that even in the end, for Samson, it wasn't about what he was actually supposed to be about. Because in the end, when he prays for God to give him the strength, why does he ask for God to give him the strength? Is it so that he can finally rescue the nation of Israel the way that he was created to, the way that God had intended him to? Was it about the nation of Israel at all? No. What does he say? Give me strength one more time so that I can get revenge. The ultimate of tragedies. The promise with so much potential. So much potential. And God's faithful with his promise. But in the most tragic of ways. And as you read through the story of Samson, there's so many different things, so many different lessons to learn. But as you come to the end of it, I think you see one of the most powerful is this question. You see, his entire life, Samson was gifted incredible strength. But his entire life, he chose to use that strength to further his story instead of God's story. At every turn, every time you see him use his strength, it's about his story. Even at the end, it's about his story. Which I think presents us with a powerful question. And that is this. How do you use your strength? And some of you are very literal people, and so you're thinking to yourself, I'm not actually that strong. I mean, I worked out last week, but I don't know that I'm there. All of us have a strength. Listen to me. All of you have a strength. Now, you may have believed a lie that you don't. That's not actually true. As a matter of fact, scriptures are very powerful in this way to tell us that each and every one of us has been uniquely created by God. Not only have you been uniquely created by God, but you've been uniquely created by God at this time in this place. And he has uniquely strengthened you. And when you step into a relationship with God, he uniquely gifts you to be able to live out your role in this story right here, right now. Don't you for one second believe the lie that you don't have a strength. You do. The question is, how are you using it? And what are you using it for? Because it's really easy as we engage this life to believe that, no, my strength is mine on one hand, that God doesn't really have anything to do with this, but it's also easy to believe that, no, my strength is really for me. It's for my story. It's for the advancement of my story. And some of you have used your strength really well, and you're very successful with your story. But can I share something with you? God has a bigger story for you than that. And if you only use your strength for your story, at best, you will be irrelevant. And at worst, it will be a tragedy. But God has stepped in and said, no, wait. I know, and this is what I have to tell my kids all the time as well. I know you think this story is about you. Turns out, it's not. I mean, literally on a weekly basis, I have to tell my kids that. I know you think this family's about you. Turns out it's not. I know you think the world revolves around you. Turns out it doesn't. And God steps into our lives and does the very same thing. He says, listen, I know you think this story is about you, but, and here's the greatest news of all, I have a bigger story that I want for you to be part of. I don't want you to just be a part of a story that lasts for 60 years or 80 years. I want you to be a part of a story that's eternal, to which there is no end. And I have intentionally brought you into that story on purpose because I have a role for you to play. Listen to me. Listen very carefully. Listen. You can't escape the story. God has brought you into it. It's why you're sitting in this room. It's why you're watching online. God has brought you into it. You cannot escape the story. The question is, what story will you tell in it? And will you live out the role? Will you live out the role that God created for you to live inside of the most significant story of all time? And one day, when this whole thing is over and the story has been told, we will look back. And you know what we won't talk about? We won't talk about our stories. We'll talk about His story. And whether or not we played the role that we were created to play in that story. And how we used our strength. Did we use it to promote His story, to tell His story? Or did we use it for our own? I want to invite you today to recommit or to commit for the first time. To say, no. I'm going to use my strength for His story. And as we look towards the fall, what I want for us to do is to be able to come together as a family over the next few months and to prepare to impact our community like never before as we walk into September with the truth and the hope of Jesus. But that's only going to happen if all of us decide together. No, all of us are going to use our strength for His story. I want to leverage what God has given me as best as I can for His story. As a body, we're going to come together as we are created to fit together to leverage our strengths for His story. Which means for some of you, you need to move from just being an observer to being a participant. You need to move from being on the outside watching what God's doing to being engaged with what God's doing. And I know as we walk through this, whenever I talk to people about this, and using your strength, the significance of your story, people will begin to talk to me about what they do professionally, and they'll say, you know, I don't. And some of you, as you engage what you do professionally, you feel that it's significant. For a lot of us, when we engage what we do professionally, we don't feel that it's significant. And people will come up to me and say, man, if I'm going to use my strength to tell His story and to be part of what's significant, then I feel like maybe I have to change what I do professionally. I want to challenge that just for a second as we go into this, because hopefully you understand this. So most of you probably know who Paul is. For those of you who don't know, Paul's an individual that God used to be able to plant churches all over the Roman Empire. He actually used him to write the majority of what we call the New Testament or the Christian scriptures, the letters to the churches. Did you know that for most of Paul's experience and for most of Paul's journey, he was not professionally a pastor. He was professionally a tent maker. And he did what he did professionally to sustain what he did significantly. Listen to me. He did what he did professionally to sustain what he did significantly. And that doesn't mean that, okay, you're not doing things that are significant when you walk into your profession. And that doesn't mean that you're not walking into that profession to share the message of Jesus and to be able to live out the significant story that you can live out there. But understand that for all of us, that's part of our journey. We have to do what we do professionally to sustain what we do significantly. I remember meeting Louis Giglio. He's an individual. He started this thing called Passion. Maybe some of you have heard of it. But I remember meeting him years ago, and we were doing some concerts together in the city, and I remember as I first met him, I was talking to him about what he did. And at the time, he traveled with these bands. Some of you have probably heard of them. Chris Tomlin and David Crowder, these guys. And I asked him, I said, okay, well, you know, is this what you do? You travel with these bands and put on these concerts. And he said, well, you know, this is what I do professionally, but what I actually do. And he started to tell me about this Bible study that he led. And I'll never forget it, because it captured for me so well. And it would be easy to look at what he did professionally and say, well, that's significant. But it captured me so well, that dichotomy that we live in as we look to use our strength for his story, the reality that, no, there are things that I have to do professionally in order to be able to sustain what I do significantly. And I know some of you look at me as a pastor and you're like, well, that's not true for you. I mean, you're a pastor and you think that I pray all day and just read the Bible and that's all I have to do. But the reality is I have to interact with HR all the time. And it's super annoying. This past week, I spent hours upon hours talking to brokers and talking about properties as we're looking to be able to continue to move forward as our church family. And sometimes that can be really frustrating because I'm like, I don't know if this feels, it doesn't feel significant what I'm doing here. But I understand there are things that I have to do professionally that allow me to be able to sustain what I do significantly. All of us have to do that. But we can't begin to believe that the story is just about what we're going to do professionally. We can't lose sight of that which is significant in our profession and also what it allows us to be able to do as we engage the world around us. And so as we come together today, I want to invite you. I want to invite you to evaluate your life, to be able to ask, how am I using my strength? And as I engage this, how am I engaging the significance of his story, and specifically to invite you into that with us together here at Hoboken Grace as we prepare for the fall? Now, today we've done something special to be able to help you do that, because on both sides of the room, you're going to see tables that are set up over there, and all of our departments are here, and all of our department leaders are here for you to be able to engage with all the different things that we do so that you can get off the bench and get on the field, so that you can stop being an observer and be a participant and be part of what God's doing right here, right now, and the new community that he's given us to reach. I want to introduce you to those departments to kind of talk you through what you're going to be interacting with. Now, inside of these departments, there's all sorts of different teams, and every single one of you, I'm telling you, there's a place for every single one of you. Some of you have believed, you've believed the lie that you don't matter to the mission. It is a complete lie. We cannot, as a church, do what we were created and what God is calling us to do without all of us doing it together. And someone may have told you in the past that you don't matter. Someone may have told you in the past that you don't have a strength. That is not true. You matter to this mission. And so I want to invite you to explore these different opportunities. As you see up here on the screen, these are actually divided. So the ones on this side are on this side of the room. The first one is human resources, which is about as exciting as watching paint dry in terms of a name. Now, some of you are in human resources. You're very offended by what I just said. Listen, I know that what you do is really important and really engaging, but the rest of us don't think so, okay? And so you have to understand it differently. Don't think human resources like people who hire people and fire people. Think team development. These people are the individuals who work with training on our teams and onboarding on our teams. The human resources is actually the department that puts together this entire team link experience, right? So think that way. If you love helping people take next steps and getting involved, it's going to be a great place for you. Analytics and web, this should actually be named analytics or web, because some of you are like, no, I do analytics, but I don't know anything about a website. It's actually two different teams, but they come together inside of one department. And so if you love that, if you're gifted in that, check that out. Neighborhood, this is our community impact. You see us doing bridge events and all the different things that we do throughout our city. That department does that. Communications is pretty self-explanatory. A lot of social media, writing, editing, that type of thing. And even when we go into what we're doing here on Sunday, communication is a big part of that. First impressions, these are the people who set up this space and also welcome you into this space. So some of you are really good at smiling. I'm not. I'll just tell you that. That's not my strength. But some of you are, and that's a great place for you to get started and just help people feel at home when they walk in. Service programming is the band and tech and all that goes into that inside of our spaces. Equip are those who, that's our growth department. So a lot of the classes that we run, baptism, all those pieces is run through the Equip department. And then Grace Kids are those who are investing in that next generation and loving the little ones who are part of our family, that third, that crucial third voice in the lives of our kids. And so they're going to be on this side. These teams are going to be on this side. And what's going to happen is that in just a little bit, I'm going to pray for us. Those of you who are online, our hosts actually have something special prepared for you that they're going to walk you through. And then here in this space, we're going to bring the lights up and just give you a chance to go and explore and to be able to meet those teams. Now, some of you are already on a team, and today's just a huge celebration of you and the fact that you're part of this, that you're using your strength in this way. And then for others of you, this is going to be the chance for you to step into that. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. Some of you are thinking, oh my goodness, I can't sign up for a team right now. I'm going to be traveling so much this summer. I know. That's why we decided to talk about it now. I understand you're going to be traveling a lot this summer. And so what we want to have is a significant amount of time to be able to walk through training and get you onboarded before we get to the fall. This is not about how you're going to be a consistent team member in the next 2 weeks. This is about, this gives us enough time to be able to make sure that our teams are ready for what? Are ready for the fall so that we can impact our community like never before. We have been presented with a whole new neighborhood, a whole new community of people who don't know Jesus. It's our responsibility to make sure that they know, to share that hope and that truth. It's going to take all of us deciding, no, my strength doesn't come from me, and it's not just going to be used for me. I'm going to use it for his story. Will you pray with me? Father, I thank you for the incredible opportunity that lies before us. Thank you for all of those that you've brought together in this space, all the different strengths that are represented in this room. Father, I pray that you would forgive us for the times, for all of the times, so often, when we buy into the lie that you don't have anything to do with our strength, that we believe it comes from us. For all the times when we, rather than using it for your story, we use it to advance our own story. Father, I pray for those who will join a team today for the first time, I pray that they would experience you in service like never before. And I pray that they would experience the joy of living for a story that's bigger than them. The joy of being a part of your body and being used by you for that which is eternally significant. In Jesus' name, amen.